You're tuned in to listen to...
He's got Cruz! 35-30!
Want to get no punch! Rosen intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. John Schmuck, Lance Meadow with you, talking Giants football and the NFL for the next 1 hour. It is the final day of Giants organized team activities, OTAs, which means mandatory minicamp starts next week as this Giants offseason continues onwards and we get closer to training camp, which is now about 50 days away, give or take. And Lance, as we move ahead here, we talked about one position of strength earlier in the week. That was the Giants' wide receiver core, how many they're going to keep, who the final guys onto the roster are going to be. I thought it was a good chat, so I figured the position on defense that most mimics the wide receiver position on offense is probably the defensive line. You have a lot of guys that I think will be on NFL rosters this year, even if it is not the Giants roster, and the Giants could have a lot of very tough decisions to make come the end of August, beginning of September.
Well, they kept 10 defensive linemen last season, John, and you're looking probably at a similar number this season, whether it be five defensive ends, five defensive tackles, or some other combination. As you mentioned, based on the players they brought in this offseason, and based on some of the guys they brought in via the draft, you're going to have a number of positional battles. It's going to be very hard to keep everybody, and that's a good thing. That is a good problem to have because that's just going to push everybody forward throughout the course of training camp. You look at what they did via free agency. You bring in Kenrick Ellis. I mean, he could very well have a huge impact with respect to this defensive line. Demontre Moore, you hope that he takes a step forward in terms of his development, and the double O with what he can bring to the table via the draft. You know, those are three players in particular when you focus on the defensive line that I would say, okay, watch out. And then hopefully, obviously, JPP can stay healthy and pick up where he left off towards the end of last season.
All right, well, let's break it down before we go end and tackle and break it down position by position. Let's talk about overall numbers here first. You're probably, last year, I believe the Giants kept 11 defensive linemen at the start of the season. It was 10?
It was 10.
I thought that was an 11th because somebody was hurt and they eventually brought
him
back.
I'll confirm. I believe it was 10.
Whatever the case might be, you're keeping maximum 10, maybe an 11th if you really, really get greedy about it. So if you take a look at the final numbers, you're assuming JPP is going to be back on the roster by that point, okay? That's one. We'll stick a defensive end first. George Selvey, a veteran they brought in, that's two. Robert Ayers is three. Demontre Moore is four. Draft pick Owamabe Odighizuwa is number five. So those are five defensive ends that you're pretty darn sure is going to be on the roster. I'd say the only guy with a chance of maybe not making it out of that group is Selvey. I think the other four guys are guaranteed to be on the roster unless something very, 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 very strange happens, all right? So there's five. Now you go to the defensive tackle spot. Jonathan Hankins, no question about it, on the roster. Jay Bromley, third-round pick last year, no question about it, on the roster. Kenrick Ellis, free agent pickup from the Jets. I'd be very surprised if he wasn't on the roster. Kerry Wynn is a hybrid DND tackle. So, I mean, you put him whatever group you want. That's another guy, young player developing. You'd be shocked if he wasn't on the roster considering his development last year. Then you have Marcus Kuhn, who's been on the roster the last couple of years, a guy that's shown development over the years. He's a good player. Will he make the final 53? And then I'm missing one guy.
Cullen
in the defense. And then, of course, the veteran Cullen Jenkins, who's been here a couple years. He's really the veteran leader of that group. So that's 11 guys that you probably have a very, very good feeling about being on this roster at the end of the summer. And I don't know if you can keep as many of 11. You have the list right here. Last year they kept 10.
Yeah.
So that would be one more than last year, and 10 was considered a pretty big number last season. So as you go through that group, Lance, and you separate a DND tackle, again, you're going to have some tough decisions to make, and I'd be shocked if they kept less than 10 this year.
Well, I think they're going to keep 10 again. The reason why I'm not going to push it to 11, John, you know, let's consider some of these other positions. And we're not necessarily going to sit here and break down the entire roster, but they kept 9 defensive backs last season. Do you maybe push that number up given the youth and the safety spot? Do you maybe try to keep an extra player because you're worried about the lack of experience,
injuries?
Well,
last year, let's see, they kept Burhey, Demps, Stevie Brown and roll. So they kept four safeties.
And Bowman I would technically play both.
And I would expect them to keep four safeties again this year. And then I think you have to keep five cornerbacks, right?
Absolutely.
So I think you have to keep nine defensive backs. I agree with you.
I'm saying, though, maybe you push it to 10. If you find somebody, obviously, that's worthy of keeping a roster spot,
maybe.
There's no guarantee that that happens. They kept six linebackers. I anticipate they're going to do the same thing. So I don't necessarily see that number fluctuating.
I think there's a chance you only keep five.
Well, if that's the case,
where you make the move, I think that's where you make it.
Well, if that's the case, then that may open the door for your 11th defensive lineman.
But
if
again,
you want to go in that direction.
I'm not advocating 11. I just think there are 11 defensive linemen on this team that are NFL-worthy players. And maybe more than that, if one of these young guys that they brought in this offseason as a player they added after the season, as a veteran addition or an undrafted free agent or something like that, steps up and shows you something. Remember, Kerry Wynn last year was a surprise. At this time last year, nobody was talking about Kerry Wynn being on this roster. So is there going to be another player like that this year that shows up in training camp? Once the pads comes on, you get a little bit more physical, and you say, wow, this guy's got to be on this team. We can't let this guy go. Someone else is going to pick him up. He's going to be a player for them. Then all of a sudden, you look at maybe 12 or 13 guys that you're really considering for a roster spot at the end of the summer. So I just think it's going to be a great competition. And I think the question is, Lance, do you feel like you have to split it up? End tackle? Do you have to have five ends and five tackles? Can you have six ends and four tackles? Kerry Wynn gives you flexibility. Colin Jenkins can give you flexibility swinging out the end. He's been playing defensive end during OTAs. Robert Ayers has moved inside to a pass-rushing defensive tackle. They talked about Odighizuwa being a pass-rushing defensive tackle when they drafted him. So you have guys here that can move around, which I think gives you a lot of flexibility. So in my opinion, you're not going to be hamstrung based on the positions, D tackle. You could keep your best 10 and you go to war that way.
Well, I would agree with you. I mean, based on the fact that you listed about four players who can play both positions, and when you have that flexibility, that versatility, then you don't necessarily have to be so strict based on the numbers.
Right.
Hey, I need 5 and 5. I think you can do 6 and 4 or some other combination. As long as you know, in a pinch, if I move Colin Jenkins to the inside, he's comfortable. If I move Kerry Wynn to the inside, I know he's comfortable. And I'm sure they're doing a lot of that during the course of OTAs as well as training camp. Spags is trying to determine, where can I get the top four guys in the right spots to effectively stop the run as well as get to the quarterback. So that at least helps you compared to perhaps what you were looking at last season. You were referencing Kerry Wynn. Remember, Israel Adonijay comes in late in training camp, and he impresses during the course of the preseason. Kerry Wynn quietly beats him out to make that final spot on the 53. We could very well see something similar come to fruition this season. The Giants are always looking at the market. You never know if there's going to be a player that's going to be added to the roster. Could all of a sudden push a current player that is on the roster, and that could obviously bring up the competition in those. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see something similar, but Wynn was probably one of the biggest surprises last season. But what stands out to me about Kerry Wynn, John, is the fact that, you know, more often than not, you hear about an undrafted player, he makes the 53, and he's inactive time and time again. He remains quiet. Kerry Wynn got into games late last season and was productive. So that, to me, separates him from some of the other players like the Adewale Ajomos who we've seen in camp, who have made the roster and haven't necessarily taken full advantage of their opportunities. Wynn, the way he practices is the way he plays in games and vice versa. And as long as he maintains that hunger, you know, that's going to give him a very good shot to maintain a spot on this roster.
201-939-4513. We'll take your calls at that number. We'll also take your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat if you want to discuss things there, right here on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. And I think one thing we'll see, Lance, is that they're going to utilize a lot of these defensive linemen that are on the active roster. You know, if there's 10 guys on the 53, I think you'll probably see, you know, 8 or 9 of them active every game day, because Steve Spagnuolo will want to rotate those guys, use them in different spots, and use that depth to his advantage to keep guys fresh.
Well, that was what his identity was the first time around when he was defensive coordinator. He likes to utilize a variety of different players. You're not going to just see four players in on all three downs. You're going to see different combinations. You could very well see four defensive ends in the front four. It wouldn't surprise me. He's a creative defensive coordinator, and that's why it's going to be very interesting to see some of these formations during the preseason. Not that the Giants are going to showcase everything. You know, nobody in this league does that in those four preseason games, but it'll at least maybe give us a taste of what what the identity of this defense is going to be. And that's more of a reason why, as you just alluded to, John, you maybe keep an extra defensive lineman as long as you're going to utilize them during game day. Now, there's no point of beefing up the roster with one position if you're going to deactivate half of those. But if you wind up keeping an extra defensive lineman active, assuming obviously the health department cooperates in other facets of this team, you know, that would give them a little bit more ammunition to retain and hold on to some of these players. There's a lot of versatility on the defensive line, and that I think is probably one of the most appetizing aspects of this roster, because you know, you can move guys around, and Spags, I'm sure, is going to take advantage of that.
All right, now let's talk about playing time. The top defensive lineman on this team, and I'll put JPP and Jonathan Hankins on a tier on their own based on their play last year. How many snaps are they going to play in a game? Is Steve Spagnuolo going to limit their snaps to between 50 and 55 to make sure they're not playing, you know, 67, you know, 70 snaps and they're tired at the fourth quarter? Or are we going to see them out of the game more? Because last year, I'll have to go back and look at the actual numbers on Pro Football Focus, but Jason Pierre-Paul, to me, played pretty much every snap on defense that he was healthy.
I was going to say, I think there was a game he had over 100 snaps, if I'm correct, and he was
been.
Asked
at least
about
over
that by
80,
the media.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they really pushed him to the limits, but, I mean, did it seem as if he really wore down? I mean, I understand the sacks are going to fluctuate, and that's what Giants fans are going to turn to, but at the end of the day, sacks come in bunches, so I'm not going to focus solely on that number. JPP's been very good against the run, John. And if you can keep him in and keep the offensive line thinking, are they going to rush him? Are they going to try to bring him to the quarterback? I think there is value in trying to keep him in nearly every down,
but
because of his balance.
In the fourth quarter is a JPP that's played 35 snaps heading into the fourth quarter better than a JPP that's played 55 snaps heading into the fourth quarter.
Well, I'm certainly going to agree that the guy who plays 35 snaps will probably be effective, but who knows how the game plays out?
Well, obviously that's true, and depending on what the score is, that's going to, you know, dictate how you use these guys over the course of the game. But as we talked about with Robert Ayers, with DeMontre Moore, with Kerry Wynn, I think you have enough guys here where you don't have to play Jason Pierre-Paul 80 snaps. And frankly, I think you're going to see JPP move around a little bit, too. I think you're going to see him at the left-end spot a little bit. I think you're going to see him at the right-end spot a little bit. And again, this is assuming he eventually does, you know, report and everything gets worked out with the franchise tag. I'm confident that it will, but we'll see. Nobody knows. We'll see if he's in minicamp next week, too. That's something we'll have to wait and see. Next week it is mandatory, so if he isn't here, there would be a fine situation there for him. But to me, I think he's going to be used in a lot of different ways this year when – you know, the last few years, he's really been at that right-end spot, and that's pretty much it.
Well, Spags is different than Perry Fuel. They're two different individuals. I'm not assuming that the script is going to be the same. I think there's going to be some new wrinkles that Spags is going to add into the mix. And every defensive lineman in this league, I think, should be comfortable, John, whether you put him on the left side or the right side. I really don't think you should have to think very hard.
I agree.
If we move him to the opposite side, is he not going to be effective? Give the offensive line as many different looks as you can possibly do, so this way you keep them on their toes.
Now, I do think certain guys are built better for one side of the line. Now, I don't think JPP is one of those guys. I think with his ability to play the run, as you mentioned earlier, he can play both the right and the left end spot. You generally want your right end to be your speed rusher. You want your left end to be the guy that can anchor a little bit, you know, seal that edge and be a little bit better run stopper. I think JPP can do both of those. Now, I think DeMontre Moore is probably, physically based on his skill set, probably more of a right end.
I would agree.
If you look at
it. He's got to be more consistent in stopping the run.
Robert Ayers, I think, is the guy that can probably be both sides because he's been good against the run in the past with Denver. If you believe Stern Analytics last year, he had a down year stopping the run last year. But I think he can do both. You know, Justin Tuck was the guy that could do both. OC. He was a right end. You never saw OC get moved over to left end, even when Spags was here. At least I don't remember that. Neil, do you remember OC ever moving to left end when Spags was here? Never, right? No, he was primarily a right defensive end. So they will use these guys in different spots, but some players are better suited to certain positions. We'll keep talking about this at 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's go to the phones. Starting us off is Abdul in Minneapolis. Abdul, what's going on?
Abdul, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear, Abdul. What's going on?
All right, good. Yeah, I'm thinking about the roster in general, and one thing that really I played football up through college, and the one thing that really killed me is when my coach was so stubborn about certain things, and he wouldn't play players. I think a lot of coaches in the NFL have this problem, all except for, I think, Belichick. You know, let's go back to why Washington didn't get a lot of playing time. Because he didn't practice hard or he didn't show up enough in special teams.
With throwing the fact he also couldn't run the full route tree, which Corey Washington said in a media avail yesterday last year, I didn't know the full route tree.
Okay. Now my point is probably less important. I didn't hear that part. But I'll still go on. I've seen coaches spite their face and cuff notes just because they were so stubborn, and they tried to take a player and make him do something he wasn't good at, even though he could do other stuff and could help you. You know what I mean? And I think Belichick does the opposite. I think Belichick sees a player, sees his strength, and makes him a better player. Like, how many times has Belichick taken a player from, you know, the scrap heap, brought him into New England, and turned his career around because he was open-minded. You know, he looked at the strength of the player and didn't decide, oh, I'm not going to play him because he didn't do A, B, or C. And I'll ignore that he could do, you know, F, G, and H. You know, and I something about, others, you know, I know coaches have their systems and their egos, but I think coaches need to be more open-minded. And look at DeMarcus Moore. He couldn't play the run as well, right? But, you know what, put him on the field and let him blitz. Let him get on the field and get some playing time. Instead of sticking him on he won't learn on the bench.
Wasn't DeMarcus Moore used in pass rushing situations last year?
We had Kiwanuka who couldn't do a thing. He couldn't get off blocks, and he was still starting. And we had players behind him. Like, let's try use Ayers more. You know, and,
well,
Ayers, and
Ayers played tremendously, Abdul. Then he got hurt. Now, Ayers was very much in the rotation last season.
Was he starting?
Well, but what difference? But Abdul, what difference does it make if a player starts? If the big purpose of this conversation is the fact that guys are going to rotate.
What
difference does it make if a player is going to start? If we're talking about how there's depth on the defensive line, and more often than not, players are going to rotate this season.
I saw certain players get more playing time than they deserve just because they had more experience and the coach is too stubborn or scared to put someone else
well,
in there.
Well, Abdul, look at it this way. You have a new defensive coordinator. The one guy you mentioned, Mathias Kiwanuka, isn't on the roster anymore. So
thank God, yeah.
That's not going to be an issue this year. So I at this point, we're in June. I wouldn't reflect back on playing time under a different coordinator, the player that's not here anymore that happened 6 months ago.
I guess the past few weeks, all I've heard is – players won't get playing time unless they, you know, on special teams. And that's been a kind of a mantra I've heard a lot over and over and over again. And I'm like, if this player could help you on the field, who cares about special teams? Throw someone else on special teams and let the player do what he could do.
No, Abdul, here's the trick, though. Here's the thing. You say throw another player on special teams. Maybe you don't have another player on your active game day roster that can play special teams. So
you don't have a third or fourth safety or a backup linebacker or other players out there?
They're already on special teams.
Okay. Oh, listen, I'll say, from my experience, I played at Hobart. That's why I wanted Ali Morpeth to become a Giant.
Okay.
And, you know, and in high school, under Scarsdale High School up in New York. And we're pretty good, but some of my coaches were just so stubborn sometimes. And we would talk about it, like, why aren't they playing this guy? And they just wouldn't do it, you know, and as players we couldn't do anything. And I think the NFL has that kind of problem. And I think that's why people love playing for Belichick, because I think he thinks outside the box and he doesn't follow the, you know, it's what we do and it's where the NFL always has been.
Look,
you know,
Abdul,
I think Belichick go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, and I will let you finish. But this is how I look at it, and I think you're right. Some coaches, and I'm not saying Tom Coughlin's one of these guys, will get into that trap where, you know, a player does one thing wrong and they'll hold it against them and they won't let him get back on the field. I think that does happen in the league. I think you're right. But I want to put you through a little mind exercise here in terms of Corey Washington, because that's who you seem to be referring to a lot to. All right, when we talked to Eli Coach and Corey Washington last week, or it was Monday, excuse me, Coach said, this guy's made so much progress from last year, he's playing so much better. Eli says he's much more reliable, he's more in the right spot, he's done his homework, he's learned the route tree, he's much more precise in his routes. Corey Washington, and this is his quote, I understand why I didn't play as much last year. I was inexperienced, I was from a small school, I didn't know what I was doing from time to time, but I feel a lot more comfortable now and I feel like I'm a much better player. So, here's my point. If all three of those guys are saying that now, doesn't that indicate to you that last year, maybe Corey Washington, despite his success in a couple of preseason games, wasn't quite as ready to be an NFL receiver as some fans might have thought?
Yes. But that's when we were still in fighting for a spot. After we dropped off and we were 6-10, he was still stuck on the bench. And why not use the, why not use him? Why not use those games to see what he could do? And we didn't do that. And you know, and we're sitting, we're against Philly last year, the last game. We were terrible. Did Washington get on the field? No, he didn't.
That's
fair. We're stuck with Preston. We're stuck with Preston Parker. We stuck with who's. I'm not nothing against Preston Parker, but you know what? Give the kid a chance. You know, and you know what? You're right. If the guy can't run the route tree, I get you. But when you have nothing left to lose, shake it up a bit. You know, and you know, that I get very frustrated when I see stodgy NFL. You know, won't think, and that's why I think Spags is a breath of fresh air, because I think he does think out of the box. I think he sees people, you know, he realizes, you know what, this guy may not be great at drop back, but he's a great blitzer. I'll blitz him. You know,
well, in fairness, and I mean, I understand your point, but on defense, I think they did make a nice effort in trying to get some of the younger guys on the field late in the season when maybe the games weren't as important. You know, Kerry Wynn got a lot of playing time. Devon Kennard expanded in his playing time. So, you know, I mean, think there's examples on one end, and then there's maybe, yes, like you said, the Corey Washingtons of the world where, okay, maybe two games left of the season, you would have liked to have seen some more real game experience. But at the end of the day, you're still trying to win games. You're still trying to gain some confidence. And if Corey Washington, going back to what John said, does not know some of the basics, the route running, and so forth, he becomes a liability to not just himself but the rest of the team. And I think coaches need to sometimes guard themselves from that as well as what is good for the team. You know, there's a lot of things that go into those types of decisions.
And I'll do one more thing that I want to say before I let you finish. I think when you talk about special teams isn't keeping him off the field as a receiver, but special teams gets him on the roster as a receiver. Special teams gets you on the active, you know, 46 on game day, you know, because you have to have X number of players that can go on there and play specials for you. So, you know, a guy like Cruz and a guy like Beckham, you know what, they're not going to contribute on special on coverage teams. It's just the facts. They're not going to do it. Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, he's not going to do that. So, you know, you have to have the guys on the back end of your roster be able to contribute on special teams. And that's when you do the 53 in September, and that's when you do your active roster on game day. Everybody has to have a role. And, you know, Corey Washington is not doing the team any good as the fifth or sixth wide receiver sitting on the bench the whole game, not contributing at all on special teams. So while I'm not trying to tell you that Corey Washington's useless because he doesn't play special teams. That's not the case. But Corey Washington gets a shirt on game day a lot more often if he can. He's helping himself by doing that because, you know what, once you're active on game day, then you have a chance to play. If you don't get the shirt, you don't have a chance. Once you get the shirt, a couple guys get hurt. Who knows? You might have an opportunity like Ramses Barden did a couple years ago when you had a couple injuries in the middle of the season.
Okay, I hear you. Look, thank you for letting me rant for a little bit. I appreciate it.
No problem.
That's Corey Washington, I said. He's just one example. And you have to be, you know, you have to know the route tree to play. I completely get that. You know, and back to the roster spots, I think the one person who's not going to, on the defensive line, is not going to make it is Coons. I think Coons is that one. He's a decent player, but he's been there for three or four years. I think he's the one that's who won't have the chair at the end when the music stops.
All right, thanks, Abdul.
All right, Abdul, appreciate the phone call.
And I do believe that Marcus Coons will have to step up and start making some more plays and making some more flash moments. Because I think he's been steady, but as Shakes likes to say, a lot of times he's in the game and you don't notice him as much. You know, the coaches might see different stuff on tape, but from a layman's perspective watching the game, he's not the guy that's going to flash and get penetration, push the line, you know, make a lot of those types of plays. So I think Coon is one of those guys where it's time for him to take that next step. He's shown what he can do, and I think it's time for him to show that next step of improvement. I think that's fair.
Well, the other thing to keep in note, while it does say that he has 3 years of experience, remember, he got hurt.
Correct.
So this is potentially maybe that breakout year when you start to have enough experience under your belt to all of a sudden wow you and show you those flashes of consistency, not just here or there.
All right, here we go. What else do we got here on Twitter? And I think this is a good point. At this hustle, referring to Abdul's question, coaches do exhibit habits with who they trust. I believe it is more of a trust issue than being stubborn. And I think he makes a good point. Because I think the most important thing to coaches is that they can trust the player to be where he's supposed to be and do what he's supposed to do. And once you're not sure if the guy is going to do that, that's when he finds his way, you know, into the quote-unquote doghouse and he has trouble getting onto the field. Because those types of mistakes, you know what those turn into? Pick sixes. They turn into turnovers.
Costly
they turn into
ones,
big
yeah.
plays that cost you games.
And that's why a coach is going to be hesitant about putting a player in that position. And that's why we always talk about, John, the importance of practice. Because if a player continually makes the same mistakes in practice, they're not going to have the confidence to put that player in a real-life game situation. Because then, all of a sudden, when you make a mistake in practice, it's one thing. When you make a mistake in the game, as John just mentioned, now you're talking about giving up points or putting your offense or defense in a precarious situation. So that's why you can't overlook the practice regimen of a player and how hard that player works, because that is likely going to carry over to a game situation.
And very quickly, before I get back to the calls, before he mentioned the Preston Parker thing, you know, why not play him instead of Preston Parker? Well, why do you punish Preston Parker? You know, he's a guy that's trying to make his way in this league. He's not an old player. He's more of a veteran than Corey Washington. But he showed something last year, frankly, more than Corey Washington did. That's why he was playing. So I don't think it's fair to necessarily punish Parker to give, you know, Washington a chance when Parker outplayed him in practice, preseason, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I just simply go back to the player that is more consistent, John.
Yeah.
And that's what it comes down to. Now, Parker was out of football the previous year, too, before he came back to the Giants. So, you know, he had somewhat of a chip on his shoulder to make a statement last season. He had that one very effective game, if you remember, against the Seattle Seahawks, if you go back to the numbers. So Parker, to me, when he got in, did he give you 100 yards every game? No, he wasn't called upon to do that, but he made plays to warrant additional playing time as the season progressed.
201-939-4513. I see a couple tweets here, fans, and I might as well mention it because it is out there. Fans asking about Evan Mathis, a free agent. Obviously, he's a free agent. He's out there. All the teams will look at him. He'll look at all the teams, and frankly, he will decide the best spot for him. Teams can go after him, but much like other free agents, the player controls that process. So I don't know what the Giants' interest is. I'm sure they know what type of player he was. He's made a couple of Pro Bowls. He's a good player. Finances come into it, all that stuff. So there's a lot of issues at stake here, guys. I know you guys want us to say, well, no, I'm telling you guys, the Giants are really interested. They're going to go after him hard, this and that, this and that. Well, here's the bottom line. The Giants are going to make this decision. They don't tell us. And frankly, if they did tell us and we told you, we wouldn't have a job tomorrow and there wouldn't be a show. So it's really that quite simple. So they'll look at their options. Mathis will look at his options and we'll see where he winds up. Now, would a theoretical Pro Bowl guard help this Giants offensive line? Of course. Theoretical Pro Bowl guard would help every offensive line. Could you slide a guy like that at left guard and, you know, move Pugh out to right tackle? Yeah. And in your theoretical world, you could do something like that. But again, I don't know what the organization's interest is. I don't know what Mathis' interest is in coming here. He's a free agent. He's out there. And that's pretty much all we can say about it.
Well, there's two parts of the equation, John.
Right.
And you just touched on that. The fact that the player has just as much say in what team he wants to go to.
Not just as much.
As the team.
He has all the say.
All the say. Well, I think Lyle Collins is probably the best example. Because we've had some of these conversations with respect to Lyle Collins. And there was a Monday Morning Quarterback SI.com article by Robert Klemko,
right,
that said that he wanted to go to a warm weather climate and he wanted to go to a team that was close to his home. So therefore, you eliminate the Giants from the equation. I don't know what Evan Mathis is thinking, but one thing based on the reports, and you touched on this a bit, John, is the fact that he reportedly did not see eye to eye with his contractual situation with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Correct.
Now, that would mean, and this is just a speculative statement, I'm assuming he wants to get that money back, if not more, if he goes to another team.
Logic would dictate if he was at odds with the Eagles over money, money's somewhat important to him.
There you go. So,
correct.
Do the Giants want to bring him in and show interest? That remains to be seen. Like we've said all the time.
Can another team offer more money? Who knows?
Who knows?
With the cap situations.
I mean, there's a number of different factors, yes, that I think come into play. The other example that I'll bring up that is relevant, you know, a lot of people on Twitter and in Giants chat were bringing up Jake Long, who was out on the free agent market. Now, Tom Coughlin told the media they brought Jake Long in for a workout. They had a visit. They did their due diligence,
I'm not even sure if they said workout. I think they just said visit.
He did visit with him. I think
correct.
He said that he liked the food in the cafeteria.
Yes, he did
I
say that.
I remember
correct,
the
yes.
joke. Okay. So there was an interaction,
correct,
let's leave it at that, between the Giants and Jake Long. Right now, as it stands, nothing's come to fruition. But that doesn't mean that people behind closed doors are not looking at who is out there on the market and obviously exploring.
It's out there. I figure people want to talk about it, so there you go. And again, if you look at the Giants' Twitter account, the OTA, the final OTA of the season is going on right now. And apparently Eli and Preston Parker have hooked up a bunch of times out there. So there you go, Abdul. Preston Parker. 201-939-4513. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey is over at MetLife Stadium. Andrew, what are you doing in the neighborhood, my friend?
I'm not spying for the Dallas Cowboys or anything. I'm just getting a preview of the Monster Jam that's taking place tomorrow. It's crazy, these vehicles, you know, the Bigfoot-type trucks. But right now they're quiet, so that's good for the phone call. But that was
absolutely
great with Tomlinson. And I remember, too, like, his mom, they said, actually, they put her on speakerphone once, and she did, like, a motivational talk before one of the games. So it was great to hear from him again. And I hope that you guys have him on when he's in the area again. And the one caller mentioned Coons. Speaking of Giant Stadium, when I met you at the J-Fund thing,
yeah,
seeing Coons in person, it's almost like, you know, shocking how big he is, but also he looks athletic, you know, despite his massive size. He doesn't look like oaf, you know, like slow and oaf, like a big oaf. So I wouldn't be surprised if Coon makes it, if he stays healthy, if he makes the team. And my player is Andre Brown, and I think he'll be a very important backup and, you know, an important rotation player, too.
Andre Brown?
Andre Brown, what, the old running back for the Giants?
You mean Jay Bromley? Is that what you're talking about?
Sorry. The running back they drafted last year, Andre.
Andre Williams.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry about that.
That's all right.
But, yeah, I think he's my pick for number one backup. And even on defense, DeMontre Moore, I don't know if he'll be considered a backup, but I think he'll be a rotation guy that plays a lot, an important backup to Robert Ayer. So DeMontre Moore and the running back, Andre Williams.
All right, appreciate it, Andrew.
All right, Andrew.
Thanks.
Stay safe in the MetLife Stadium parking
lot. Hey, look, and I said it earlier in the year, to me, the key to this Giants season, as important as the draft class is, with now it looks like two players likely being starters and Eric Flowers and Landon Collins, as important as the rookie class is, I think the key to this season, Lance, is how your second and third year players develop. You know, what does Jay Bromley give you? What does DeMontre Moore give you? What improvement do you see out of Justin Pugh? What improvement do you see out of Weston Richburg? Does Reuben Randle take another step? He's a fourth-year guy, I get that, but I'll throw him into that group anyway. And I think the progress you see from those guys, I'll throw Devon Kennard into that mix, those guys will really decide how this Giants season goes.
Well, we've been talking about how important these draft classes are, and last year, tremendous amount of depth out of this class. This year, there's potential and upside with this group. If you get a combination on both fronts, you know, you're building the nucleus of your team, not just for 2015, but beyond, because, you know, we've talked about this time and time again, and this goes for every team. The best way in the salary cap era to stay competitive year in and year out, obviously injuries play a role, is to have a number of players under rookie contract.
Right.
So this way you don't have to make big splash after big splash in free agency. The Giants over the last 2 years have gotten some quality playmakers, and I'm not just talking about first and second round picks. I'm talking about that fifth, sixth round where you have potential to throw in a player and he's going to take full advantage. Devon Kennard could be a key component to this linebacking core for years to come, and he's a late-round pick.
And by the way, two other guys I didn't mention, Nat Burhey, second-year safety, Cooper Taylor, third-year safety, two guys that could very well be starters this year. Well, at least one of the two, assuming Landon Collins is the other one.
That's where you need to strike gold. And the Giants, I think, have a number of players that fit into that category, John, who have a legitimate shot to start or at least make an impact in the rotation. And that's obviously a big positive for them.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Derek's in Atlanta. Derek, what's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing all right. Derek, how are you, pal?
First, a little funny story. I was in Costco yesterday, and, you know, I was usually wearing some kind of Giant paraphernalia T-shirt, hat, keychain, or something like that. So the guy stops me in Costco and says, yo, I have a friend who's with the Giants, and he's a linebacker. And I'm like, who? I know this about all the Giants. And he's like, Ryan Jones. And I'm like, I don't know this guy, Ryan Jones. I said, you should be friends with Giants? He said, he's on a practice squad. And I was like,
oh.
He said, I got a picture of him. He pulls out his phone, and he pulls his picture out, shows me the guy. The guy, you know, talks to him. Like, he's like a a Tongan or Hawaiian or something like that, really muscle-bound guy. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, I'll look out for him. You know, I'll look out in practice, you know, see if I can spot him or anything. And then I get in yesterday and look at Ryan Jones's cut for another linebacker.
So, in other words, Derek, it was all your fault.
Yes.
It was all my fault, so I guess I got to start at Costco.
It's too
for
bad,
me.
Derek. I actually thought you may have met one of John Schmelk's long-lost friends who was just walking around the aisles at Costco and may have thrown out his name. That would have been much better, but we'll settle for the Ryan Jones.
See now, where I thought Derek was going is that he was maybe shopping in the kids section and they had Lance Metal modeling some of the toddler
you never know.
Costco clothing.
Exactly. Yes. The half sizes.
Another thing, I met Deion Grant here. In Atlanta,
nice.
And very nice guy.
Great guy.
We sat and talked about, you know, the safeties. He told me he went up there and he met with a couple of guys and, you know, and during, I guess, the first OTAs maybe or rookie minicamp.
Yeah, Grant was here during rookie minicamp. That's
and,
correct.
Told me he goes up there quite often and showed me pictures of his Super Bowl, Lombardi Trophy, and everything. So he was a really cool guy.
Yeah, and you know, last year I think Deion Grant was up here for two or three training camp practices as well. So Deion definitely makes himself seen up here over the course of the offseason.
Yeah. So I was thinking that maybe Cullen Jenkins may not make this roster. And Marcus Coon. Those are my two guys that may not, you know, may be out. Not Cullen Jenkins. Basically, he was maybe, I think, a little injured, underwhelming last year. His age and maybe his money may cause him to be a casualty. Coon, you know, despite what the guy just said, the guy probably can lift up the building in there at MetLife Stadium, but I just don't see, you know, the progress that I think you need to. I think he's probably, unless he turns things around, could probably also be a guy that'd be cut off this roster.
So, well, there's a lot of competition, what you're alluding to, Dre. So at the end of the day, Derek, so this means that either you can cut a veteran or you could cut a young guy. I mean, I think you could easily go both ways, considering you're going to have a lot of battles between established players as well as up-and-coming players, and that's not a bad thing to have. And I also want to congratulate you, Derek, for being the first caller on today's program to actually not add a plural to Coon's last name. So congrats on that front.
All right, two more quick things. With Corey Washington, I didn't want to really talk about him too much, but what I did want to say is once you make it to the roster, I think it's up to the coaches to actually find you some time to play. Spot situations, goal line, we know he didn't know the whole route tree, but I think some jump balls on down in the goal line area, I think if you don't make the team because you're special teams, then that's one issue. But I think once you make the team, I think the coaching should find you at least some, you know, especially if you get a jersey on game day. If you get a jersey on game day, they should find you some way of getting on that field, some situation.
Well,
I think you still need to work in, you know, some playing time.
Well, Derek, if he does make it onto the active roster on game day, I think you have a pretty decent point where you want to use the players you have active. I would have to go back, and I don't know if we even can look this up, Lance. I don't know where we would find it. How many games Corey Washington did get a shirt last year? I mean, he was pretty often on that inactive list, wasn't he?
He was on the inactive list a few times, especially due to injuries.
I remember seeing
where they
him
needed
early
to hold on to another player.
Season, but I'm not sure about often.
Yeah, you know what, Derek? I'm not sure how many games he was dressed last year. I would have to look that up, but I think it's a fair point. Thanks for the call, my friend.
Yeah, talk to you later.
Thanks,
right,
Derek. 201-939-4513. Joe in Brooklyn's next. Joe, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
How you doing, Joe?
Doing well, Joe.
I have a trivia question. The Giants have won 4 Super Bowls, but before the Super Bowl era started, they won championships before that.
Yep.
So I was curious, how many championships have they won, and how do they stack up against other teams?
If I remember right, and I'm going to get my number exactly right here, because I'll make sure I have it right, I believe they won 4 before they got to the Super Bowl. Let me just make sure I'm correct before I give that number. Yes, the Giants won NFL championships in 1927, 1934, 1938, and then 1956. So they won 4 NFL championships before they won their 4 Super Bowl championships. That gives you a total of 8. And the Giants, frankly, should have won a couple more in the late 50s. They had one of the best teams in football. They lost a couple of Super Bowls in those late 50s. So the Giants, that's 8. I'm not sure how that compares to some of the other combined championships or some of the other older teams. I know the Packers won a ton of championships pre-Super Bowl with Lombardi in the early 50s for sure. You
Packers
have, it there,
have 11.
Yeah, the Packers. The Bears probably have a bunch too, right?
Let's see.
Yep, Chicago Bears.
Yeah, Bears are up there.
With 8. No, 9.
Well, no, 9 was runners-up.
No, but again, this is...
In terms of...
Oh, okay, so this is not counting Super Bowls. This is just championships.
Correct, exactly.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
All right, and let's see. The Detroit Lions had... This is all pre-Super Bowl. At 4. The Steelers had 8. The Browns had 4. The Eagles had 3. So I'd say combined Super Bowl and pre-Super Bowl championships, the Giants are probably in the top 5, I would say.
Based on what I'm seeing here, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because this is, like you said, this is the laundry list of pre-Super Bowl.
Yeah, so I think they'd probably be 3rd or 4th behind the Packers, Bears, and I think those are the only teams combined Super Bowl and championships using my quick math that would be ahead of them.
I think the Giants should promote the fact that they've won so many championships.
They do.
Because everybody thinks it's just 4, you know?
Well, within the Super Bowl conversation, obviously it's 4. But if you go into the archives and the media guides and the history of the team, they always address the fact that they've won championships before the Super Bowl era, Joe.
I remember this, too. I mean, that's just the way the NFL calculates their statistics. Everything, you know, is, you know, post-merger. You know, the old AFL and the NFL back then. So everything is calculated post-merger. I mean, you don't see the Packers running around telling people they have 14 championships. So... That's simply just the way things are calculated.
Okay, guys. Good show. Thanks a lot.
Thank you,
Joe. Appreciate
I appreciate it. 201-939-4513. Let's go back to the phones and say what's up to Vince. Actually, Dre in Atlanta was next. Right, Johnny? Dre was holding the longest. Dre, what's up, pal?
Hey, what's up, Lance? What's up, John? How
what's up,
going?
Dre? How are you, buddy?
Hey, in there. Man, let me tell you something. As a former Pop Warner high school college football player, you earn, once you get on the team, you earn about special teams. I played special teams. I was on kickoff return, punt return, and I was even a gunner. You know, that gets you on the team. You know, while you're there, you know, you learn the route tree, you know, you get coached up, and when you show that you can handle the detail on the field during game day, you get on the field or injury or whatever, so have you. But the fact of the matter is, you don't want your players to be gimmick players to the point where all he can do is do the jump ball. So when he gets on the field, every team can game plan to know, oh, Corey Washington's on the field. I double team him or put a larger defender on him so you can jump with him. You don't do that. He has to be able to do more than just be a gimmick receiver. And he admitted that he didn't know the route tree and he was good at doing the jump ball and doing the nine route, the fly pattern. You got to be more than that. But that's not why I called. Here's why I called it. You know, I was looking at the defensive line and looking at where Pro Football Focus is on stated. They seem like their predictions of what you have done in the past, within the past couple of years, not what you have the potential to do in the future.
Okay.
So I don't take too much. Go ahead.
No,
Doug.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. I'm just listening to you. It's all good.
Yeah, I don't take too much to take in predictions in reference to, you know, who team is better because you really don't know. Injuries, and it's just a parity with the NFL. You really don't know what you're going to get this particular season. For all we know, Seattle could go 3-13. We don't know. So, you know, fans just need to relax and, you know, stop looking for the Giants to be in the top because the past couple of years when we won the Super Bowl, we weren't even considered one of the top 10 or top even 15 teams in the league, but we still won the Super Bowl. So relax. Get off of Coughlin. Get off of Reese. You know, and let things play out. Give them the time. Training camp is around the corner. You know, you still got players that's going to be cut. Relax. Let things play out. That's the reason why they get paid the big bucks and we're fans. They get paid to do a job and we pay them to enjoy a good show. Let them do what they do. Thanks.
Thanks, Dre.
I appreciate it.
And I think his first point of Corey Washington is very good. You want to send out complete football players, and I think that's what the Giants are trying to make Corey Washington. And, look, I mean, we tried to level expectations last year, and it clearly didn't work. You know, it's a kid coming out of a super small program, you know, not even a Division I college football program. And to expect him to come into the NFL and, you know, be a big-time wide receiver wide away is crazy. And I think the other point Dre makes is good, is that, and I saw some Giant fans, you know, freaking out, and we'll talk about this once minicamp is over. It'll be one of our topics over the course of the offseason between when they leave for minicamp and come back for training camp. Pro Football Focus on ESPN via ESPN.com did a ranking of the rosters in the NFL, and they had the Giants as the 20th strongest roster. I could bring up the list. I think they had the Eagles at 6 or 7. The Cowboys, I think, were around 11, give or take. The Jets were right behind the Giants at 21. This is off the top of my head. I'm trying to remember what was on there. I think the Seahawks were 1. The Packers were 2.
Correct. Yep.
If I recall, the Patriots were 3. The Saints, strangely, were in the top 8 or so on that list. So that's something we can tackle after minicamp ends next week. I'm trying to keep some of those off-the-field stuff, the NFL top 100 player stuff we can get into after that. So there will be some interesting things, like off-the-field kind of not super X's and O's related that we can touch
on. Everybody does rankings, you know, in this day and age.
And, yes, I will, you know, prefix this by saying those rankings are meaningless and don't mean anything, as do all these predictions. But considering there'll be nothing going on, it gives them to talk about.
John Schmelk may come up with a ranking system himself. You never know, right? You got some time on your hands.
Wow. Well, I know whatever ranking system I come up with.
I know.
On the bottom of the list.
There we go. I knew that one.
201-939.
Before you get back to the phone calls, actually, I did solve the mystery. I have Corey Washington. You were asking about inactive versus active. He was dressed for 14 games last season.
Oh, really? Okay. I remembered incorrectly.
He was inactive for the Eagles season finale. And he was inactive also for the other game was the Cowboys game in week 7.
There you go. Okay, I was wrong. You know what? I didn't think he was active that many games. I guess once Beckham was hurt early in the year, then Cruz went down, it opened up a spot for him. Well, that's my fault. I didn't think he was active for that many games. My bad. 201-939-4513. Good job tracking that down, man.
I try
once
in a while.
Occasionally you're useful.
Yes, I know.
It's occasionally.
I try to take advantage of my spot here. Once in a blue moon, it happens.
Let's go to Vince up in Troy, New York. Vince, you're up next, bud.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing great, Vince. What's up, pal?
Listen, this is my first time calling.
Well, thank you for calling in.
I've been a Giants fan since 1948.
Great.
Listen, I want to talk about the schedule.
Okay.
Every year we start off by playing the Cowboys. What's the story with that?
It's not every year, but it does tend to happen more often than not, and here's why. The NFL likes to get a premier game on their schedule in every major slot in that first week. So they want a big-time game Thursday night. They want a big-time game at Sunday at 4 o'clock. They want a big-time game Sunday night. And they even want a pretty big game, I believe, on one of the two Monday night windows. Yeah. Because they have two Monday night windows in week one. They play, I think it's 7 and 9:30 or 7 and 10, something like that. And quite frankly, Vince, there's no bigger game that's going to do better ratings every single year than Giants-Cowboys. The Cowboys have the biggest fan base on the planet. The Giants are in the biggest market on the planet. You will not find a game that gives you better ratings, and that's why the NFL likes to schedule them in week one of the season.
Okay, I got one more question.
Sure.
Do you ever think the Giants will come back to Albany? Because, boy, we miss them up here for their training camp.
You know, Vince, I will say this. I don't think it's impossible. John Mara, when he's spoken publicly, has not closed the door on at some point returning the team to Albany in training camp. But I will tell you one thing that's going to have to happen. And I'm not saying if this happens, they'll definitely come back. But I think the chance of them coming back without this happening is extremely low. Albany needs an indoor practice facility. Because I can't tell you how many times, you know, Tom Coughlin and his field out there on the practice field. And you know how it is in Albany in August. You have those rolling thunderstorms where you'll get some lightning and things like that for, you know, 10, 15 minutes at a time.
The jet and stream comes in from the left, too, which is uncooperative.
Well,
but anyway.
Shut up. So eventually, whenever they have these sensors set up. And whenever there's lightning within a half mile radius of the practice fields, you have to take the players off the field. And once they take the players off the field, even if it's in the first 10 minutes of practice, you can't make that practice up. And the only thing the Giants players can do once they're off the outdoor practice fields in Albany is do a walkthrough on a basketball court, which is near their locker room. which basically means they didn't get anything done that day besides mental reps. So the big thing about Albany is having that indoor practice facility. If that happens, maybe one day the Giants will come back. And who knows, eventually when the Giants have a new coach here, Tom Coughlin's not going to coach forever, maybe, you know, he'll decide that we definitely want to go away even without the indoor practice facility. Who knows? Then the Giants could wind up back in Albany too. So John Mara has not closed the door on it. One day maybe, but I think that indoor practice facility would help Albany's cause a whole lot.
Well, thank you, and I hope they build something for him.
Yeah, Vincent, well, I can tell you, Vincent, thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. The Giants players.
Thanks, guys.
You're very welcome, and thanks for calling and listening to the show.
And thanks for the answer, Al Roker. Appreciate it.
The staff and I really dislike you. So the staff.
I mean, you could have just said they needed indoor facility. Instead, we got an entire weather pattern historical lesson on the lightning versus the clouds.
As someone that actually decided to show up to Giants training camp in Albany once in a while, because I never saw your butt up there.
Well,
by the
way,
I didn't know
I had to be there to understand the weather patterns.
Well, but here's the thing. You've had to cancel practice when, and Neil can attest to this, when not one drop of rain has fallen, and they've had to cancel practice because lightning is simply in the area, and because of player safety, you don't want to get your players killed by lightning strikes. Yeah. So it's not just rain. You know, it could be no rain, but if the lightning's close, you still have to pull the guys off the field. It makes the situation even worse. We had guys coming in and out of the indoor-outdoor thing three or four different times because of, you know, just lightning being in the area. So I could say this. Coach, I think, likes having his players away. I think I see a difference in the camaraderie. And even as a staff, you build camaraderie when you're in one place for a certain amount of time. And, you know, preliminarily right now, I know that it's not official, but Tom Coughlin talked about it a few weeks ago, perhaps going to Cincinnati for a few days to practice there before that game. I think you're trying to capture some of that going away. And you're also playing against live competition, a different team, which is great. And I think that'll hopefully try to give a little bit more of a training camp feel, being away from the facility for a few days.
On the flip side, if you look at the advantages of them having training camp here, you're in your comfort zone, you have all your facilities here, you do have that indoor facility
Correct.
As well. I mean, there's a huge advantage, I think, in keeping the team here, as there are benefits in moving elsewhere and having that camp feel and teams bonding and so forth.
Well,
but they do that with the hotel, though, anyway. I mean, like, players get to be around one another. It's not like they're all scattered.
It's a little bit different. On off days in Albany, you're up in Albany. You're not, you know, going to go see your families. Here you're going to go, you know, see your families. You're going to split up. You're not in that dorm thing. You're not sharing dorms with people like you are. I mean, in Albany, you got three or four players in a dorm. I mean, so you have to interact.
You're on
campus,
no
choice.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's another good thing about being here. You have to sleep in dorms, which is clearly,
yes.
you know, not the best.
Mattress could get a little uncomfortable.
It's only 12:53. But I believe we only have one call on the line. So, Shakes, I'm going to give you the rest of the program to get your point across.
Oh,
what do you got for me, man?
Thanks for taking my call, fellas.
Thanks for calling in, Shakes. What's going on, pal?
Same old. I got some things.
Bring it. What do you got?
All right. Well, first question for y'all, though, is this. I believe me and my co-host, we have press passes to come up to camp, but I'm not sure how that works. So I wanted to just get y'all take on, like, what do we do from there?
Well,
we have the press passes?
Here's what's going to happen. We have an area that we keep Lance in. It's all the way in the back in the corner. It's kind of blocked by a bunch of cement walls and some pillars.
And
so
I need some company.
I'm going to stick you guys right with Lance in that corner just so you don't get into any trouble, all right?
Oh, that's where y'all going to put
See,
it.
What Schmelk failed to say, Shakes, is it's the most entertaining corner of Giants.
Oh, really?
That's where the fun happens.
Though, Shakes, what will happen is that you'll get here, you know, you'll park in the press parking lot. You'll come. There's a media.
The valet service. John Schmelk will take your car to the proper spot.
There is a media room inside. There is a trailer outside that has media in it as well. And, you know, there's a portion, I guess, next to the practice field at training camp. Where, you know, they have the media, and you guys will be able to watch practice.
Ha-ha! We end it. Okay.
Well, again, I'm assuming you guys have the things arranged. I was not asked to step in on your behalf. I might have said something to Ms. Phillips at some point or another. I don't know. But, you know, and hopefully we will see you guys down here, and you guys won't cause too much trouble and get tossed out.
No. Yeah, I hope so.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Thank you. All right. One more thing. Well, a couple more things.
Yeah, man. What do you got?
All right. Y'all being a little two kind of coon here. And y'all know how I feel about coon.
I brought it up earlier in the show, man.
I know. I heard you. I think it's even worse than that. I mean, he doesn't do anything. And he gets pushed back. I mean, what defensive linemen don't cause penetration?
Shakes, I believe this. I think you have to see a jump from Marcus Coon this year. I agree with you.
All right. And my next question is, what's up with all these mediocre interests as far as James Jones from Oakland? Now, I remember last year we was a little interested in him, and I'm glad we didn't sign him. I was one of those guys that's like, no, that's mediocre, stop. But what's y'all take on that? Why do we keep on looking at these guys instead of looking at some more offensive linemen that we could pick up, maybe Evan Mathis?
Shakes, honestly, I didn't even see that James Jones report. Where'd you get that from?
Oh, it's circulating.
Okay. It's like circulating through your people, I'm assuming. That's what it is.
I mean, it's circulating on the web we are interested in him, and I'm like, I don't understand.
Well, Shakes, I mean, I haven't seen the specific report, but if you look at the depth at the wide receiver spot, I wouldn't necessarily say that the Giants are in need right now of
and
a veteran like James
is.
Jones. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have enough quality players in camp right now to field six guys if they choose to keep that many.
And, Shakes, how do you know the Giants aren't knocking on the door and Mathis and talking to his people? I don't know if they are or not, but how do you know that they're not?
I don't know, but I hope so. Because all this, I keep hearing that we're fine at where we at. Now, I know we inquired about Jake Long, so obviously we're looking at some more offensive linemen.
Correct.
I do know this. Yeah. I do know that. But the notion that, oh, we're fine, we don't need no more linebackers. Oh, we're fine, we don't need no more safety help. Oh, we're fine, we don't need no more nickel corners. I don't understand it.
Maybe I missed something, Shakes. Who's saying that everybody's fine?
That's what I'm hearing from Reese in his press conferences.
Hold on, Shakes, hold on.
We're going in for what we got right now.
Well, I mean, Shakes, you can't expect your general manager to step out in front of a microphone and say, boy, our safety position stinks. I did a terrible job.
But I do hear him always say we are always looking for talent and not coming out in press conferences saying that we're fine.
Well,
that we're going to go in with what we got.
But
I never
Shakes,
heard that
Shakes,
before.
To be honest with you, the last time Jerry Reese addressed the media was, what, like 2 months ago?
It was right after the draft, right?
Yeah.
We're talking about
there's a lot of time that went by since he last spoke to the media. So, I mean, to take that quote, there was nothing recent that was ever said about the state of the roster.
Well, Shakes, I'll say this. You know, Jerry Reese consistently says a couple different things. One, we're always trying to improve the team. I honestly don't remember him ever saying we're fine, but for him to say, we're going to go to war with what we have, I mean, that's just a fact. I mean, you go to war with what you have. I mean, I'm not sure what you're looking for him to say.
And Shakes, getting back to your point, we mentioned this. If there is evidence that the Giants inquired about Jake Long and the team addressed this publicly because Tom Coughlin said that to the media, then that is enough evidence to show, regardless of the speculation, the Giants are
around.
Exploring their options.
Absolutely.
Period. I think that's the best thing you can read into that, especially when, you know, and you, like everybody else who's passionate about the Giants, I see the stories, they should look at this guy, they should go passionately after this guy. And now we have evidence that there was interaction with Jake Long, so that to me is a signal, nobody's sitting back and just watching.
Well, you know, and
they
Shakes,
are exploring.
I want to add to something very quickly, and you might disagree with this, and that's fine. You might have a different opinion than the front office. But when the front office goes out there and they bring in players X, Y, and Z in the offseason, right, and you see players, you know, U, W, and V out there still in free agency, and you said, well, I don't understand that. I think the players U, W, and V that are available now are better than players X, Y, and Z, and they sign. Why aren't they bringing these guys? Well, clearly if the Giants chose the players they chose over the players that are free agents, they think the players they brought in are better. Now, you might disagree with that. Maybe you're wrong. Maybe they're wrong. We'll find out once the game starts. But the Giants aren't going to backtrack now and say, well, we changed our minds. The players we signed, we don't think they're better than the players that we passed up on. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, I don't agree, but
right,
I know what
fair.
You mean.
And, you know, guys, that's the thing. We like you guys disagreeing. That's fun. You guys call up. You think the Giants did a wrong thing, made a bad move, call up. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about the pros and cons and everything. But the Giants made the move as they think it's the best move. Again, we'll find out whether it's right. It hasn't worked out the last couple of years. The team has made
my
the playoffs.
My next question for that, to follow it up.
Sure.
If they made the wrong decisions, can somebody get fired? I'm just saying.
Well,
because this will be the four years straight that we won't make the playoffs. If we don't make the playoffs this year, somebody got to go.
Well, Shakes, let me put it this way. At the end of John Mara's press conference after the season, he was asked, I'm trying to remember the exact wording so I get it right. It was something to the effect of, is this season a very important one for, I think, you know, the people on the staff here or something like that? And I think John Mara answered, I think he said something like that. That's an accurate statement, or I think that's true. So, again, that doesn't mean that this is a do-or-die season. You don't make the playoffs. People getting fired left and right. But clearly, it's a very important year, and the ownership here expects the team to bounce back and make it into the playoffs and be a much better team. Now, again,
so urgency?
Yes. I would say there is certainly a lot of urgency.
Here's
here
the exact quote. Would you describe next year as a win-or-else proposition for a lot of people in this franchise? His answer, John Mara, quote, I do not think that is an unfair statement, end quote. That was the last question in that press conference in which he addressed the media following the season. So there you go, Shane.
Okay.
It's the best I can do for you, brother.
No doubt, man. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Not a problem,
Shane. Satisfying.
Sounds good.
I appreciate y'all taking my call, man.
Don't be a stranger, brother.
Speak.
Be good, man. All right, everybody. Good job on the phones. Good to hear from Shakes.
Yes. A little mellow today, though. Not as upbeat as normally he was. I don't know.
Well, maybe this is one of his sleep-in days.
Could be.
He might be a little worn out from the shakedown yesterday.
Yes.
Perhaps.
Busy. Very much on the air, just as often.
You can check
as
out the shakedown on Twitter, by the way. There's your plug, Shakes.
See,
that'll make
there you go.
Happy.
See, we always do what we can, Shakes.
Yes.
Thumbs up there.
All right. Everybody, great job on the phones. Good job on Twitter. We're off this weekend. Yay. We're back on Monday. Me and Dottino have you on Monday. And then there's a combination. I think you and Anita are Tuesday, Wednesday.
I believe so.
Did you end up making that switch with Dottino
yes,
next
did
week?
Make that switch,
all right.
Yes.
So you and Anita Tuesday, Wednesday. Paul and Anita on Thursday. And then I believe I'm with you on Friday.
I think we may be back together.
I think we're back together on Friday.
Unfortunately,
so,
yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's it's too bad. I already have a big red circle on my calendar with a big question mark
imagine.
And a loser face.
I choose purple as my color of choice.
Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll see you on Monday on Giants.com. Take it
easy.
Have
a good one.
All right, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got Cruz! 35-30!
Broken intercepted!
Touchdown, Giants!